Cats are like witches. They don't fight to kill, but to win. There is a difference. There's no point in killing an opponent. That way they won't know they've lost. And to be a real winner, you have to have an opponent who is beaten and knows it. There's no triumph over a corpse, but a beaten opponent who will remain beaten every day of the remainder of their sad and wretched life. There's something to treasure. Cats do not, of course, rationalise this far. They just like to send someone limping off minus a tail and a few square inches of fur. Gribo's technique was unscientific and wouldn't have stood a chance against any decent swordsmanship, but on his side was the fact that it is almost impossible to develop decent swordsmanship when you seem to have run into a food mixer that is biting your ear off. The witches watched with interest.
"I think we can leave him now," said Nanny. "I think he's having fun."
They hurried towards the hall. The orchestra was in the middle of a complicated number when the lead violinist happened to glance towards the door and then dropped his bow. The cellist turned to see what had caused this, followed his colleague's fixed stare, and in a moment of confusion tried to play his instrument backwards. In a succession of squeaks and flats, the orchestra stopped playing. The dancers continued for a while out of sheer momentum and then stopped and milled about in confusion. And then, one by one, they too looked up. Saturday stood at the top of the steps. In the silence came the drumming, making the music that had gone before seem as insignificant as the chittering of crickets. This was the real blood music. Every other music that had ever been written was merely a pitiful attempt to sing along. It poured into the room, and with it came the heat and warm vegetable smell of the swamp. There was a suggestion of alligator in the air, not the presence of them, but the promise. The drumming grew louder. There were complex counter-rhythms, much more felt than heard. Saturday brushed a speck of dust off the shoulder of his ancient coat and reached out an arm. The tall hat appeared in his hand. He reached out his other hand. The black cane with the silver top whirred out of the empty air and was snatched up triumphantly. He put the hat on his head. He twirled the cane. The drums rolled, except that maybe it wasn't drums now, maybe it was a beat in the floor itself, or in the walls, or in the air. It was fast and hot, and people in the hall found their feet moving of their own accord, because the drumming seemed to reach the toes via the hindbrain without ever passing near the ears. Saturday's feet moved too. They beat out their own staccato rhythms on the marble floor. He danced down the steps. He whirled, he leapt, the tails of his coat whipped through the air, and then he landed on the foot of the step, his feet striking the ground like a thud of doom. And only now was there a stirring. There was a croak from the prince.
"It can't be him! He's dead! Guards! Kill him!"
He looked around madly at the guards by the stairs. The guard captain went pale.
Again? I mean, I don't think..."
he began.
"Do it now!"
The captain raised his crossbow nervously. The point of the bolt wove figures of eight in front of his eyes.
"I said, do it!"
The bow twanged. There was a thud. Saturday looked down at the feathers buried in his chest and then grinned and raised his cane. The captain looked up with a certain terror of death in his face. He dropped his bow and turned to run and managed two steps before he toppled forward.
"No," said a voice behind the prince. "This is how you kill a dead man."
Lily Weatherwax stepped forward, her face white with fury.
"You don't belong here any more," she hissed. "You're not part of the story."
She raised a hand. Behind her, the ghost images suddenly focused on her, so that she became more iridescent. Silver fire leapt across the room. Baron Saturday thrust out his cane. The magic struck and coursed down him to earth, leaving little silver trails that crackled for a while and then winked out.
"No man," he said. "There ain't no way to kill a dead man."
The three witches watched from the doorway.
"I felt that," said Nanny. "It should have blown him to bits."
"Blown what to bits?" said Granny. "The swamp, the river, the world? He's all of them. Oh, she's a clever one, that Mrs. Goggle."
"What?" said Magrat. "What do you mean, all of them?"
Lily backed away. She raised her hand again and sent another fireball towards the Baron. It hit his hat and burst off it like a firework.
"Stupid, stupid," muttered Granny. "She's seen it doesn't work and she's still trying it."
"I thought you weren't on her side," said Magrat.
"I ain't, but I don't like to see people being stupid. That kind of stuff's no use. magret, garlic, even Oh, no, surely not again.
The Baron laughed as a third attempt earthed itself harmlessly. Then he raised his cane. Two courtiers tumbled forward. Lily Weatherwax, still backing away, came up against the foot of the main staircase. The Baron strolled forward.
"You want to try anything else, lady?" he said.
Lily raised both hands. All three witches felt it, the terrible suction as she tried to concentrate all the power in the vicinity. Outside, the one guard remaining upright found that he was no longer fighting a man, but merely an enraged tomcat. Although this was no consolation, it just meant that Gribo had an extra pair of claws. The prince screamed. It was a long descending scream and ended in a croak somewhere around ground level. Baron Saturday took one heavy, deliberate step forward, and there was no more croak. The drums stopped abruptly. And then there was a real silence, broken only by the swish of Lily's dress as she fled up the stairs. A voice behind the witches said, "Thank you, ladies. Could you step aside, please?" They looked around. Mrs. Goggle was there, holding embers by the hand. She had a fat, gaily embroidered bag over her shoulder. All three watched as the voodoo woman led the girl down into the hall and through the silent crowds.
"That's not right either," said Granny under her breath.
"What?" said Magrat. "What?" Baron Saturday thumped his stick on the floor.
"You know me," he said. "You all know me. You know I was killed, and now here I am. I was murdered, and what did you do?"
"How much did you do, Mrs. Goggle?" muttered Granny. "Nah, we ain't having this."
"Shh, I can't hear what he's saying," said Nanny. "He's telling them they can have him ruling them again, or embers," said Magrat.
"They'll have Mrs. Goggle," muttered Granny. "She'll be one of them Emmy Nancy's greasies."
"Well, she's not too bad," said Nanny.
"In the swamp she's not too bad," said Granny. "With someone to balance her up she's not too bad. But Mrs. Goggle telling the whole city what to do, that's not right. Magic's far too important to be used for ruling people. Anyway, Lily only had people killed. Mrs. Goggle and sent them to chopping wood and doing chores afterwards. I reckon after you've had a busy life you ought to be able to relax a bit when you're dead."
"Lie back and enjoy it, sort of thing," said Nanny. Granny looked down at the white dress.
"I wish I had my old clothes on," she said. "Black's the proper colour for a witch."
She strode down the steps and then cupped her hands around her mouth.
"Cooey! Mrs. Goggle!"
Baron Saturday stopped speaking. Mrs. Goggle nodded at Granny.
"Yes, Miss Weatherwax?"
"Mistress," snapped Granny, and then softened her voice again. "This ain't right, you know. She's the one who ought to rule, fair enough. And you used magic to help her this far, and that's all right. But it stops right here. It's up to her what happens next. You can't make things right by magic, you can only stop making them wrong."
Mrs. Goggle pulled herself up to her full impressive height.
"Who's you to say what I can and can't do here?" "We're her godmothers," said Granny.
"That's right," said Nanny Ogg.
"We've got a wand too," said Magrat.
"But you hate godmothers, Mistress Weatherwax," said Mrs. Goggle.
"We're the other kind," said Granny. "We're the kind that gives people what they know they really need, not what they think they ought to want."
Among the fascinated crowd, several pairs of lips moved as people worked this out.
"Then you've done your godmothering," said Mrs. Goggle, who thought faster than most. "You did it very well."
"You didn't listen," said Granny. "There's all sorts of things to godmothering. She might be quite good at ruling, she might be bad at it, but she's got to find out for herself, with no interference from anyone."
"What if I say no?" "Then I expect we'll just have to go on godmothering," said Granny.
"Do you know how long I worked to win?" said Mrs. Goggle haughtily. "Do you know what I lost?" "And now you've won, and there's the end of it," said Granny.
"Are you looking to challenge me, Mistress Weatherwax?"
Granny hesitated and then straightened her shoulders. Her arms moved away from her sides, almost imperceptibly. Nanny and Magrat moved away slightly.
"If that's what you want."
my voodoo against your headology? If you like. And what's the stake? No more magic in the affairs of Genua, said Granny. No more stories, no more godmothers, just people deciding for themselves, for good or bad, right or wrong. Okay. And you leave Lily Weatherwax to me.
Mrs. Goggle's intake of breath was heard around the hall.
Never. Hmm? Said Granny. You don't think you're going to lose, do you? I don't want to hurt you, Mistress Weatherwax, said Mrs. Goggle. That's good, said Granny. I don't want you to hurt me either.
I don't want there to be any fighting, said Ella. They all looked at her.
She's the ruler now, ain't she? Said Granny. We've got to listen to what she says.
I'll keep out of the city, said Mrs. Goggle, ignoring her. But Lilith is mine.
No.
Mrs. Goggle reached into a bag and flourished the raggedy doll. See this?
Yes, I do, said Granny.
It was going to be her. Don't let it be you.
Sorry, Mrs. Goggle, said Granny firmly, but I see my duty plain. You're a clever woman, Mistress Weatherwax, but you're a long way from home.
Granny shrugged. Mrs. Goggle held up the doll by its waist. It had sapphire blue eyes.
You know about magic with mirrors. This is my kind of mirror, Mistress Weatherwax. I can make it be you, and then I can make it suffer. Don't make me do that, please. Please yourself, Mrs. Goggle, but I'll deal with Lily.
I should box it a bit clever if I was you, Esme, muttered Nanny. She's good at this sort of thing.
I think she could be very ruthless, said Magrat.
I've got nothing but the greatest respect for Mrs. Goggle, said Granny. A fine woman, but talks a bit too much. If I was her, I'd have had a couple of big nails right through that thing by now.
You would too, said Nanny. It's a good thing you're good, ain't it?
Right, said Granny, raising her voice again. I'm going to find my sister, Mrs. Goggle. This is family.
She walked steadfastly towards the stairs. Magrat took out the wand.
If she does anything bad to Granny, she's going to go through the rest of her life bright orange and round with seeds in, she said.
I don't think Esme would like it if you did something like that, said Nanny.
Don't worry, she doesn't believe all that stuff about pins and dolls.
She doesn't believe anything, but that doesn't matter, said Magrat. Mrs. Goggle does. It's her power, it's what she thinks that matters.
Don't you reckon Esme knows that, too?
Granny Weatherwax reached the foot of the stairs.
Mistress Weatherwax, Granny turned. Mrs. Goggle had a long sliver of wood in her hand. Shaking her head desperately, she jabbed it into the doll's foot.
Everyone saw Esme Weatherwax wince. Another sliver was thrust into the raggedy arm. Slowly, Granny raised her other hand and shuddered when she touched her sleeve. Then, limping slightly, she continued to climb the stairs.
"I can do the heart next, Mistress Weatherwax," shouted Mrs. Goggle. "I'm sure you can. You're good at it. You know you're good at it," said Granny, without looking around.
Mrs. Goggle stuck another sliver into a leg. Granny sagged and clutched at the banister. Beside her, one of the big torches flamed.
"Next time," said Mrs. Goggle. "Right, next time, I can do it."
Granny turned around. She looked at the hundreds of upturned faces. When she spoke, her voice was so quiet that they had to strain to hear.
"I know you can too, Mrs. Goggle. You really believe. Just remind me again, we're playing for Lily, right? And for the city?" "What does that matter now?" said Mrs. Goggle. "Ain't you going to give in?"
Granny Weatherwax thrust a little finger into her ear and wiggled it thoughtfully.
"No," she said. "No, I don't reckon that's what I do now. Are you watching, Mrs. Goggle? Are you watching real close?"
Her gaze travelled the room and rested for just a fraction of a second on Magrat. Then she reached over carefully and thrust her arm up to the elbow into the burning torch. And the doll in Azulia Goggle's hands burst into flame. It went on blazing even after the witch had screamed and dropped it onto the floor. It went on burning until Nanny Ogg ambled over with a jug of fruit juice from the buffet, whistling between her teeth, and put it out. Granny withdrew her hand. It was unscathed.
"That's headology," she said. "The only thing that matters. Everything else is just messing about. Hope I didn't hurt you, Mrs. Goggle."
She went on up the stairs. Mrs. Goggle kept on staring at the damp ashes. Nanny Ogg patted her companionably on the shoulder.
"How did she do that?" said Mrs. Goggle.
"She didn't. She let you do it," said Nanny. "You got to watch yourself around Esme Weatherwax. I'd like to see one of them Zen buggers come up against her one day."
"And she's the good one," said Baron Saturday.
"Yeah," said Nanny. "Funny how things work out, really."
She looked thoughtfully at the empty fruit juice jug in her hand.
"What this needs," she said, in the manner of one reaching a conclusion after much careful consideration, "is some bananas and rum and stuff in it."
Magrat grabbed her dress as Nanny strode determinedly daiquiriwards.
"Not now," she said. "We'd better get after Granny. She might need us."
"Shouldn't think so for one minute," said Nanny. "I wouldn't like to be in Lily's shoes when Esme catches up with her."
"But I've never seen Granny so agitated," said Magrat. "Anything could happen."
"Good job if it does," said Nanny.
She nodded meaningfully at a flunky who, being quite quick on the uptake, leapt to attention.
"But she might do something dreadful."
"Good. She's always wanted to," said Nanny. "Another banana daiquiri, my hat, my coat. Chop, chop."
"No, it wouldn't be a good idea," Magrat persisted. "Oh, all right," said Nanny.
She handed the empty jug to Baron Saturday, who took it in a kind of hypnotic daze.
"We're just going to sort things out," she said. "Sorry about this. On with the motley, if anyone's got any left."
When the witches had gone, Mrs. Goggle reached down and picked up the damp remains of the doll. One or two people coughed.
"Is that it?" said the Baron. "After 12 years?
"The Prince is dead," said Mrs. Goggle, "such as he was."
"But you promised that I would be revenged on her," the Baron said.
"I think there will be revenge," said Mrs. Goggle. She tossed the doll onto the floor. "Lilith has been fighting me for 12 years, and she never got through. This one didn't even have to sweat. So I think there will be revenge."
"You don't have to keep your word."
"I do. I've got to keep something."
Mrs. Goggle put her arm around Ella's shoulder.
"This is it, girl," she said. "Your palace, your city. There isn't a person here who will deny it."
She glared at the guests. One or two of them stepped backwards. Ella looked up at Saturday.
"I feel I should know you," she said.
She turned to Mrs. Goggle.
"And you," she added, "I've seen you both before. A long time ago."
Baron Saturday opened his mouth to speak. Mrs. Goggle held up her hand.
"We promised," she said, "no interference."
"Not from us?"
"Not even from us."
She turned back to Ella.
"We are just people."
"You mean," said Ella, "I've slaved in a kitchen for years, and now I'm supposed to rule the city, just like that?"
"That's how it goes."
Ella looked down, deep in thought.
"And anything I say people have to do?" she said innocently.
There were a few nervous coughs from the crowd.
"Yes," said Mrs. Goggle.
Ella stood looking down at the floor, idly biting a thumbnail. Then she looked up.
"Then the first thing that's going to happen is the end of the ball, right now. I'm going to find the carnival. I've always wanted to dance in the carnival."
She looked around at the worried faces.
"It's not compulsory for anyone else to come," she added.
The nobles of Genua had enough experience to know what it means when a ruler says something is not compulsory. Within minutes, the hall was empty, except for three figures.
But I wanted revenge," said the Baron. "I wanted death. I wanted our daughter in power." 2 out of 3 isn't bad.
Mrs. Gogol and the Baron turned around. Death put down his drink and stepped forward. Baron Saturday straightened up.
"I am ready to go with you," he said.
Death shrugged. Ready or not, he seemed to indicate, was all the same to him.
"But I held you off," the Baron added, "for 12 years.
He put his arm around Azulia's shoulders.
"When they killed me and threw me in the river, we stole life from you. You stopped living. You never died. I did not come for you then."
"You didn't?"
"I had an appointment with you tonight."
The Baron handed his cane to Mrs. Gogol. He removed the tall black hat. He shrugged off the coat. Power crackled in its folds.
"No more Baron Saturday," he said. "Perhaps. It's a nice hat."
The Baron turned to Azulia.
"I think I have to go."
"Yes. What will you do?" The voodoo woman looked down at the hat in her hands. "I will go back to the swamp," she said.
"You could stay here. I don't trust that foreign witch."
"I do, so I will go back to the swamp, because some stories have to end. Whatever Ella becomes, she'll have to make it herself." It was a short walk to the brown, heavy waters of the river. The Baron paused at the edge.
"Will she live happily ever after?" he said.
"Not forever, but perhaps for long enough."
And so stories end. The wicked witch is defeated, the ragged princess comes into her own, the kingdom is restored, happy days are here again, happy ever after, which means that life stops here. Stories want to end. They don't care what happens next. Nanny Ogg panted along a corridor.
"Never seen Esme like that before," she said. "She's in a very funny mood. She could be a danger to herself."
"She's a danger to everyone else," said Magrat.
The snake woman stepped out into the passageway ahead of them.
"Look at it like this," said Nanny, under her breath. "What can they do to us?"
"I can't stand snakes," said Magrat quietly.
"They've got those teeth, of course," said Nanny, as if conducting a seminar. "More like fangs, really. Come on, girl, let's see if we can find another way."
"I hate them."
Nanny tugged at Magrat, who did not move.
"Come on. I really hate them."
"You'll be able to hate them even better from a long way off." The sisters were nearly on them. They didn't walk, they glided. Perhaps Lily wasn't concentrating now because they were more snake-like than ever. Nanny thought she could see a scale patterns under the skin. The jawline was all wrong.
"Magrat!"
One of the sisters reached out. Magrat shuddered. The snake sister opened its mouth. Then Magrat looked up and almost dreamily punched it so hard that it was carried several feet along the passage. It wasn't a blow that featured in any way or path. No one ever drew this one as a diagram or practiced it in front of a mirror with a bandage tied round their head. It was straight out of the lexicon of inherited, terrified survival reflexes.
"Use the wand!" shouted Nanny, darting forward. "Don't ninja at them! Use the wand! That's what it's for!"
The other snake instinctively turned to follow the movement, which is why instinct is not always the keynote to survival, because Magrat clubbed it on the back of the head, with the wand. It sagged, losing shape as it fell. The trouble with witches is that they'll never run away from things they really hate. And the trouble with small furry animals in a corner is that, just occasionally, one of them's a mongoose. Granny Weatherwax had always wondered what was supposed to be so special about a full moon. It was only a big circle of light, and the dark of the moon was only darkness. But halfway between the two, when the moon was between the worlds of light and dark, when even the moon lived on the edge, maybe then a witch could believe in the moon. Now a half-moon sailed above the mists of the swamp. Lily's nest of mirrors reflected the cold light as they reflected everything else. Leaning against the wall were the three broomsticks. Granny picked up hers. She wasn't wearing the right colour, and she wasn't wearing a hat. She needed something she was at home with. Nothing moved.
"Lily," said Granny softly.
Her own image looked out at her from the mirrors.
"It can all stop now," said Granny. "You could take my stick, and I'll take Magrat's. She can always share with Githa. And Mrs. Gogol won't come after you, I've fixed that. And we could do with more witches back home. And no more godmothering. No more getting people killed so their daughters are ready to be in a story. I know that's why you did it. Come on home. It's an offer you can't refuse.
The mirror slid back noiselessly.
You're trying to be kind to me, said Lily.
Don't think it don't take a lot of effort, said Granny in a more normal voice.
Lily's dress rustled in the darkness as she stepped out.
So, she said, you beat the swamp woman.
No.
But you're here instead of her.
Yes.
Lily took the stick out of Granny's hands and inspected it.
Never used one of these things, she said. You just sit on it and away you go.
With this one, you have to be running quite fast before it takes off, said Granny. But that's the general idea, yes.
Hmm. Do you know the symbology of the broomstick? Said Lily.
Is it anything to do with maypoles and folk songs and such like? Said Granny.
Oh, yes.
Then I don't want to hear about it.
No, said Lily. I imagine you don't.
She handed the stick back.
I'm staying here, she said. Mrs. Goggle may have come up with a new trick, but that doesn't mean she's won.
No. Things have to come to an end, see? Said Granny. That's how it works when you turn the world into stories. You should have never done that. You shouldn't turn the world into stories. You shouldn't treat people like they were characters, like they were things. But if you do, then you've got to know when the story ends.
You've got to put on your red-hot shoes and dance the night away, said Lily.
Something like that, yes.
While everyone else lives happily ever after.
Oh, don't know about that, said Granny. That's up to them. What I'm saying is you're not allowed to go round one more time. You've lost.
You know a weatherwax never loses, said Lily.
One of 'em learns tonight, said Granny.
But we're outside the stories, said Lily. Me, because I am the medium through which they happen. And you, because you fight them. We're the ones in the middle, the free ones.
There was a sound behind them. The faces of Magrat and Nanny Ogg appeared over the top of the stairwell.
You need any help, Esme? Said Nanny cautiously.
Lily laughed.
Here's your little snakes, Esme. You know, she added, you're really just like me. Don't you know that? There isn't a thought that's gone through my head that you haven't thought too. There isn't a deed I've done that you haven't contemplated. But you never found the courage. That's the difference between people like me and people like you. We have the courage to do what you only dream of.
Yes, said Granny. Is that what you think? You think I dream?
Lily moved a finger. Magrat floated up out of the stairwell, struggling. She waved her wand frantically.
"That's what I like to see," said Lily. "People wishing. I never wished for anything in my life. I always made things happen. So much more rewarding."
Magrat gritted her teeth.